You're listening to heritageradionetwork.org. This is a live recording from the Roger Smith Cookbook Conference.
Hi, I'm Linda Palacio, a host of A Taste of the Past on Heritage Radio Network, and we're here in our pop-up studio. I am sitting with Bonnie Slotnick, and Bonnie is a cookbook dealer, collector, lover, not a collector anymore, she says she hasn't bought new, but Bonnie is a cookbook dealer of old books in New York City, and she has a wonderful display at the Roger Smith Hotel Cookbook Conference. And Bonnie, thank you so much for taking time away from your precious books to come in here and talk to me about it. I called you a cookbook dealer, but you said no, you don't. I mean, you're not a collector,
I'm
but
a
dealer.
I'm not a collector anymore because it's like the proverbial kid in the candy store. I now own the candy store. I'm surrounded by cookbooks, you know, at least 20 hours a day. I don't feel the need to add to my own collection because if I see something wonderful, at this point I would rather put it in the hands of somebody else who would appreciate it rather than put it on my shelf where nobody else will see it.
Are most of the books you collect vintage, and they're used books?
Well, vintage
new books?
Is a word that is very popular in the book trade, and it doesn't mean anything.
Okay.
Because
tell
vintage
me.
To somebody born in 1930 is different from vintage in the mind of someone born in 1980, and I have customers in both categories.
Oh, interesting.
So vintage, it always seems to mean, say, 10 years before you were born. But the books that I sell, antiquarian, like the word antique, usually means more than 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And the other ones are just out of print, which could be out of print a year. Could be a book published in 2009. out of print, antiquarian. Some of my books are used. Some are not. Some were just tucked away somewhere untouched. So it's the books that aren't available from publishers anymore.
And what are some of the more interesting books, or let's say even the oldest books that you've come across when you were collecting them that you have had on your shelves?
Well, I differentiate. I don't use the word collecting when I'm buying for the shop. I'm buying for the shop.
Mm-hmm. Where do you go to seek out the books for the shop?
Before I had my own shop full-time, I used to spend, and I had a full-time job in cookbook publishing, I used to spend all my free time on little jaunts, just to New Jersey, Pennsylvania, sometimes to England, sometimes to the West Coast. There were hundreds and thousands of bookstores out there, and I had time to go. And now that I have the shop and I spend most of my time in the shop and I can't go, an awful lot of those stores are gone. You know, the whole book row that used to be on 4th Avenue in Manhattan. There wasn't too much left of it when I first came to the city in 1972, but you could spend a day easily just walking up and down a couple of blocks of 4th Avenue. So now that I am the prisoner of my shop, which I love being.
Which is in Greenwich Village.
In Greenwich Village,
right?
Yeah.
And you've been there for...
I've had the shop for 15 years.
15 years, okay. So back to the oldest, one of the most interesting or oldest book.
So my buying now is mostly from private individuals who call me when they have books to sell, a whole mm-hmm. collection, an estate, you know, one very special book. The oldest books that I've had, I recently sold a couple of books from 1823, and one of them was an American edition of a British book, and it was published in New York on Day Street, which is a little tiny street down in the financial district. Of course, I immediately want to go down there and see if the building
right.
is still there. I have had 18th century printing of Hannah Glass, the simple,
right.
What is it called? The Art of Cookery?
The Art of Cookery,
plain
I think
and
it's
simple.
Yeah.
And I also had an 1812 edition that was published in Alexandria, Virginia, which is a very scarce and special one. Alexandria, you know, 1812,
right.
War of 1812.
Right. What was that, and what was that book?
That was also a Hannah Glass.
A Hannah Glass edition.
Yeah, an American edition. And I actually sold that book twice because I sold it to one customer, and then he sold it back, and then it went to another wonderful customer for his wife's birthday.
Well, when you started buying the books and collecting the books for your shop, did it start out just as a passion of yours?
It started out, yes, and in those days, you know, I guess you didn't have to describe it as a passion because everything was so cheap. You know, what was the big deal if you went and spent 75 cents on a book?
Were you thinking of amassing a collection of cookbooks to sell, or just you loved cookbooks?
No, I was an art student. I went to Parsons. I majored in fashion illustration. That was why I ended up in the Village. And I'm very grateful to Parsons for one thing, and that is that it brought me to the Village, and I've been there ever since. But there was a bookstore in the ground floor of Parsons on Fifth Avenue. They had just moved to Fifth Avenue and 13th Street. This is Parsons School of Design. And when I graduated, when I was a student, I worked in the library of the school. When I graduated, I worked full-time in the library. I wasn't cut out to be an artist, clearly. And that was when I started spending a lot of time in bookstores, and of course I was spending my working time in a library. And I think it just kind of gelled that what I really love is books. People sometimes come into my shop and say, oh, you must be a great chef. And I, well, no, if I were a great chef, you would be in a restaurant right now talking to me. I love cookbooks. So I just collected whatever appealed to me, a lot of ephemera, a lot of little advertising booklets from food companies.
Pamphlets, there were a lot of pamphlets existing. Right?
Yeah, and I have a lot in the shop. Beautiful lithography, beautiful artwork. I mean, I did study illustration after all, so I really appreciate beautifully painted jello mold with sunlight shining through it, which is what you find in the old ones. I went from working in the library to working in cookbook publishing, not the most creative part. I worked for a book packager, and we did a lot of books for Time Life. We did, it, you know, packaging. Mm-hmm. You put together a book that has been described in a contract by five other guys. But I loved working there. They did the test kitchen was right. I was sitting right outside the test kitchen. They did their own photography in-house, and it was really a wonderful company.
Well, when you first started your gathering these books up, I mean, this was before the Internet. You couldn't go do a search and go, you know, have somebody send you the book. You really had to get out there and look for it, right?
And
well,
now
you've built such a reputation that, as you say, people call you when they have
every day
a book to sell.
Email from all over the country, all over the world, actually. People call and say, well, actually, one woman said, I'm selling my mother's books. I live in Greece. She's in New York. You know, can you go? So
that's interesting. And tell me some of the, I mean, people's relationships with books. You must see all different kinds of people coming to you looking for books.
Yeah, and I see it also when I'm buying books. For instance, there are books I see. A manuscript cookbook. I see a book that somebody's grandmother wrote by hand, dated, you know, this is Aunt Lily's cookies and this is that. And I would think nobody would ever part with something like that. But I've had people just hand it over, like, oh yeah, here's my grandmother's book, I don't care. And I try to convince them to keep it because it needs to be kept in the family, but if they insist, that is one of the most wonderful things to collect because that's the only thing that can really be described as unique in terms of books. When something is published in an edition, it's not unique. I had a woman come in once and ask for a book, and she said, oh, I'm sure you don't have it. It was the Antoinette Pope Cooking School. Antoinette Pope was a cooking teacher in Chicago.
I know that.
People from Chicago are just crazy about her. And she said, I want to get a copy of that book because when my mother died, my sister put my mother's copy of the book in the casket and it was buried with her. So that's the relationship. That's one end of a relationship that people have with books. There's some people who are selling who say, oh, we don't eat that way anymore. Oh, when I want a recipe, I go on the internet. Mm. And there are other people whose cookbooks mean the world to them, especially if it was their mother's book, if it's a book that got them through a difficult time in their lives. You wouldn't think a cookbook could do that, but yes.
Well, it's, you know, there's a reason they call it comfort food. I mean, mm-hmm. Can people think of food of their mothers, of their family, or loved ones as comfort food? Right? Let me bring up another topic. There was an article recently in the New York Times, and a lot of people have been sharing it back and forth. And that is that, you know, many of us think of books as
sacred.
Precious, sacred tomes, yes. Right? We wouldn't dare think of writing in them, except for cookbooks. And people annotate cookbooks, write in cookbooks. It's the one book that people feel comfortable mm-hmm. writing in. Do you get a lot of these old books that have a lot of annotations? Or?
I do, and when the writer from the New York Times came in, before she identified herself, came into my shop and said, "Do you buy books with writing in them?" And I looked at her kind of skeptically, and I said, "Well, it depends. You know, if your 2-year-old scribbled in it, probably not. But, you know, if MFK Fisher was writing little notes to herself about her copy, yes." And then it turned out that she was writing this article. And I love books with writing in them. Not random writing, but writing that tells you about the person. Because right. to me, cookbooks are so much about history. And when you add another layer of personal, you know, turned out good May 12th, 1937. I had a copy of the Searchlight cookbook that had on the apple pie recipe, which was half a page long. It was very detailed. The woman had completely filled the margins around with every date that she made the pie and that she used a little bit more ice water or that she used a different kind of apples or something.
So it was an evolution of the recipe. She changed the recipe every time.
It was like
time.
Watching a movie.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
So I know that a lot of people, I'm certainly one of them, I do not write in any book, except I found myself writing in a cookbook, and I thought, yeah, well, I guess this is okay, because if the recipe didn't come out good, I don't want to make it a second time. So I want to write on it not good.
Well, there's an issue with recipes and copyright, but and of course they can't really be copyrighted, and that's a problem with writing recipes. But the context within which they're set is very unique. So do you look for specific, like ethnic cookbooks or a period cookbooks? I really look for
books with that context. And having spent probably 15 of my 16 years in publishing writing headnotes and sidebars,
yes.
and trying to make recipes that were being published for Time Life sound like they were written by a human being, I really am totally bored by books that are just recipes, unless they're very old. They have intrinsic interest in the way the recipes are written. But now that everybody writes recipes pretty much the same way, I have to have something that tells me why this recipe is in this book and where it came from. That's why I love Nick Malgeri's baking books. And full disclosure, Nick is a good friend of mine. But he so often says that he got a recipe from such and such a friend in such and such a situation. And even if I didn't know some of his friends, I would feel like I know them because over the years reading his books, oh, this recipe is from Kyra. This recipe is from Sandy. And that makes any book so much more interesting to me.
Well, it's the human anthropological piece of a cookbook.
Without it, really, no soul.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much more, as you say, so much more than just a recipe on a page. You learn about, well, okay, who was making this food? And why were they cooking? Why did it interest them? And what was happening during that period in whatever city or, you know, country that it was?
Was it during a war? Was it... I happen to love books from the 1890s, late 1880s, 1890s, because I live in an apartment building that was built in 1892. So when I read Marion Harland, say, or Juliet Corson, I picture how the woman has to walk up my 3 flights of stairs in her wool dress with her basket, and she has to carry every single thing.
And she probably
there.
Had to go downstairs to get a bucket of water to cook upstairs.
Yes, and she had to go over to Washington Market over by the river to buy. And I can just see that whole thing happening in my building and in my apartment.
So it recreates the imagery of that
it
period.
It takes me right back, yeah. There's nothing as evocative to me as a cookbook.
If someone were looking for a specific book, do you have sources? Like, they call you? Can you find books for them?
Sure, they can call me, and people have called me and not known the name of the book any number of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of cross-examine them. You know, do you remember, did it have pictures, black and white, color, size of the font, did it have a little decorative border around the top? And very rarely am I stumped in identifying a book, just because I've seen so many of them. So, sure, people are welcome to call me if which edition of Betty Crocker is it that I have? It doesn't have covers. I get a lot of calls because General Mills gives my name to people who are looking for old General Mills
books. And if someone finds a book, let's say, that does not have a cover, but they can tell by the recipes and what's inside of it that this is an old book, can you help them identify it?
I sometimes can, yeah. If it's a 19th century book, maybe not, unless it's one that I particularly love. But the 20th century books, some of the page layouts are unmistakable. And the great thing is somebody remembering, they don't have the book. They remember the book from the 40s. It was green. It had a picture of a standing rib roast. And when I find the book and hand it to them, the look on their face is so, well, it's priceless, and it's so important to me to get that feedback, which is why I think that buying books online and selling books online is quite a bit less rewarding. Mm-hmm. I always try to explain to people that when you come into a bookstore, there's a synergy going on. You're not pointing to one thing and maybe Amazon says, oh yes, and you'll like this too. You're standing in a sea with all kinds of books flowing through it. Other people are coming and going. You're looking for a book on pasta. You happen to see a book on apples that your grandmother had, and then you're in a whole different world.
Yeah. And books are meant to be held in your
yes,
hands.
Yes.
And I think that's very important.
I noticed that every book I got today to sell that was a new book that was brought in by the author, the first thing I did was open it and smell it.
Yes, that new book
thing,
smell.
Oh, the soy-based ink is different, and this book from Turkey smells different.
Yeah. Well, Bonnie, thank you so much. This has been a real treat, a real pleasure. And
have I been here for more than 5 seconds? I feel like I just
Wish it could be a lot longer. We all like to hear about books. This is a cookbook conference, after all. Everyone wants to hear
great.
About cookbooks.
I'm having such a great time.
That's terrific. Bonnie Slotnick, and it's Bonnie Slotnick Cookbooks. I guess you can go online and Google her and you'll find it.
BonnieSlotnickCookbooks.com.
There you go.
The most retrograde website you've ever seen, but it has what you need to know.
Okay. Well, thanks again for joining me, Bonnie.
Thank you so much.
For listening. Again, I'm Linda Palacio, and you've been listening to A Taste of the Past.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, iTunes, and Stitcher for more. Visit our website, heritageradionetwork.org, for all of our 30-plus weekly podcasts. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.